Robbie Williams, I have been waiting to do this interview for years and years, and it's probably come at a time when I least expected it to come. So welcome to the show.
Hey, Pete, why is it the least expected time to be right now?
Because for me, I didn't expect the album to drop now. I probably thought you would have been away for a little bit longer. How was your time out of the spotlight?
Well, I have been out of the spotlight, so it is. I don't know where that came from. I've been out of the spotlight. I haven't been on the TV and I haven't been doing interviews, but I've been touring. I've been nonstop work since 2009. In 2006, at the end of my world tour, my head caved in. And I was like, oh, this isn't good. I'm going to go away now and retire for the rest of my life. But I didn't make any public announcement about it because I knew that I was lying. And so I went and sat on the sofa and wore a cashmere caftan, ate crisps and had Krispy Kremes. Other donuts are available. And tried to chase UFOs, grew a beard, looked like a serial killer and got fat. And then I was like, well, this isn't good for my health either. I need to come back and work. A man needs a job. So since 2009, I've been pretty full on doing a lot of stuff. It just so happens that that stuff has been in Russia or Lithuania or Abu Dhabi. And, you know, it's just not punctured the zeitgeist of popular culture in Britain. But I have been about doing stuff.
Good. And you sound happy.
Yeah, I am. I found the right level of medication and, you know, I crack on with my life. That was meant to be funny, but it's also, it's not funny because it's true. But normally that's why a joke is funny, because it's funny because it's true. But and if that medication is a lovely wife and a pair of lovely children, then I've found the right medication.
How are you finding married life and being a father?
I'm loving it. I wasn't heading into it with a lot of hope, to be honest with you, because I wasn't surrounded with good adverts for marriage, and I wasn't surrounded by any advert at all that was glowing for having kids. It just looked like a disaster of the highest proportions. Just look, everybody's head looked wrecked and sort of wandering around like tired zombies. So I didn't want to get married because I didn't think I could do it, and I thought I'd mess it up. And I didn't want to have kids just because of the effect that was going to have on my health too. But here I am, down the line, with a beautiful wife who I love and adore, that makes me very happy, that we laugh with constantly. And I've got my two beautiful children. Then, you know, there is the universe shining back at me when I look through those eyes. And I didn't know what I was going to get in return. And what I get in return is to have, have the luxury of worry and self-doubt sort of minimized, because I've got to look after these two precious young lives. And my life is rewarded a millionfold because of it. There's an answer for you. Check that out.
Let me tell you, you are in a good place, my man. Tell me this, is proving the doubters wrong still the biggest driving force in your career?
No. Having a job and being productive and still being ambitious is the driving force in my career. But proving the doubters wrong, I've given up on. They're still in the pie chart of what I need to do. But the percentage, I mean, it used to be the only driving force, but they didn't come. They didn't agree to liking me. And I shrugged my shoulders and went, oh, well, I'm going to carry on regardless.
Love that. I remember years ago reading, and if I've quoted this wrong, please forgive me, but if my memory serves me correct, you said something along the lines of, many years ago, fame made me miserable and loaded. How do you view fame now?
Well, fame is like, you know, when you're out at a restaurant and it's your birthday, and then they surprise you with a birthday cake at the end of the evening and everybody starts singing happy birthday to you and you just want the song to be over. Do you know that feeling?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what fame feels like. And people are doing a very nice thing and it's well-meaning, but you just feel uncomfortable and wish that the song would stop. And that's fame. You know, success is another thing completely. It's intoxicating and it's beautiful and rewarding. And I'm in a position where I carry on trying to be more intoxicated as possible with success. But fame's just weird and uncomfortable. people are well-meaning, but you want the song to stop.
The public fallouts with Gary Barlow and with Guy Chambers and all that, they've been, they've gone, they've passed. But it must have been difficult to have your life played out like a TV soap.
It has been and it hasn't been. You know, it's been part of the panto of my life, which I'm happy to reproduce in interviews and articles and on TV, because I think it's more entertaining than vanilla answers about muted lives. You know, I take the soap opera that has been my public life and I try to use it to the best vantage possible. Look at me saying words. I say words and they kind of make sense. I enjoyed my answer to that question.
I enjoyed it too. Now, I got to thank you, right? You give me one of the best days out of my life. 1998, what? Slane Castle. You weren't headlining. You were third in the bill. The Verve headlined. Manic Street Preachers were second. You were on at 5 in the afternoon. It was a sunny day. Do you remember it?
Yeah, I do remember much about it. What I do know is that people, that was the Slane afterwards. What I do remember is the Manic Street Preachers went on and people were still chanting my name, which, as you can imagine, for somebody that comes from a boy band, and there was this sort of militant indieism at the time where there was hatred towards anything to do with boy bands unless you were, you know, under the age of 12. And here I was at a credible music festival with the Manic Street Preachers going on after me and people were still chanting my name. It felt glorious. I love the Manics, you know, they're incredible. But it was a definite moment in history for me where there was sort of the tide is changing and people are coming on board. And I've been embraced in this beautiful country and it looks as though it's going in a good direction. It was an incredible moment.
The Heavy Entertainment Show, in your opinion, where does it rank amongst your albums?
It's always left to the public to decide that, and the public inform my opinion about my records. And unfortunately, the people that review the record inform my opinion about my own records, which is a fact for Paul McCartney that I read in an interview just recently. He said the same thing. He said, my opinion about my records change once they've been reviewed. And it's the same for me. So I don't know where it ranks. I'm very proud of it. I'm very excited about it. I hope, being a 42-year-old pop star, that there's a place for it in lots of people's hearts. And I hope that it isn't stamped on and poo-pooed. You know, I wish the best for it. I've done as much as I can. Let's see what happens.
So how long have you been working at it? And obviously on the deluxe edition of the album, you've got, like, what, 16 tracks? So how difficult was it to narrow it down to that?
I got 80 tracks in all.
Wow.
And, you know, there are various gatekeepers of everything that I do in my life, my wife being the main gatekeeper of all the quality that, or lack of quality that comes from me. And she plays the what should go on the album and what shouldn't go on the album. And then around them are people like Michael, my manager, and Tim, my manager, and then Chris Briggs, my A&R guy. And we all sit and we all decide which are the, you know, the best songs that should be representing the next Robbie Williams album. And that's how it happens. I wrote a song for my wife called When You Know, and it's about her. And I would like to think it's a beautiful song that touched her heart. And we were in the bath together about 6 weeks ago, and we were playing the What Goes on the Album game. And the first five songs happened, and we were like, yep, yep, at the end of that, yep, that should go on. And the sixth song was a song about her, and then there was a silence after the song. And she went, no, I don't think that should go on. And I'm like, oh, that hurts. It's about you. But it is on.
Ed Sheeran and Brandon Flowers were on there as well. How did those collaborations come about?
Ed by email, Brandon through go-between. Stuart Price, who is my friend and sage person that I go to for everything that I need to understand in the world. He is a friend and producer of the Killers. And he said, look, I've just been away with Brandon. Check this out. Played me this song, and all the way through it I was just like, oh god, I want this song, I'd love to sing on it. And Shy Ben's getting out, as they say in Geordie land. So I said, can I have it? And after Conflab, it came back as Two Thumbs Up. So I get to sing on a Killer song, and it's on my album. It's called Mixed Signals. And then there's another tune called Pretty Woman that I wrote with Ed Sheeran. I was neurotically worrying about my album and lack of hits on it. And I was just like, oh, God, send an email to Ed. He does hits. Hi, Ed. Robbie Williams. Have you got any hits? Sent me a song called Pretty Woman, and I thought it needed a chorus, which I went off and dutifully did the next day. I did a chorus and came back as this fully formed song with that me and Ed have written called Pretty Woman.
You mentioned at the top of this interview about doing stuff in Abu Dhabi and doing stuff in Russia and all that. Party like a Russian. Have you really upset the Russians?
Fortunately, I haven't. Fortunately for me, it's caused a bit of a stir in the Western media, and it's given me a lot of column inches. It's it happens to be untrue, which I'm glad that I can say that. No, it's been warmly received over there, and I'll be going there on tour, and I'll be singing it to them, and you know, it's all meant with affection. But the press have written this story about it, you know, upsetting the Russians. I'm grateful for the column inches, but it's not true.
Do you love being unpredictable?
I do not know how to be anything other than who I am. And if that's unpredictable, then that's unpredictable. But it's, you know, I just go into the studio and try to be creative and see what happens. And if that particular day this happens, then that's what happens. I'm not trying. Or maybe I am trying to be controversial and unpredictable. I don't know. I haven't had a word with myself just recently.
If you could go back to your 20-year-old self and give yourself one bit of advice, what would you say?
I would say this. You are never going to be confident. Do not worry about that. Do not search for it. What you are is incredibly brave. Be armed with the knowledge of that and go forward and fight, fight, fight.
I said at the top of this that this is an interview that I've been waiting for many, many, many years. Let me tell you, Robbie Williams, you've not disappointed me in any way.
Yay! So I'm glad about that. Thanks, mate.